This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
DraftKings is the official daily fantasy partner of Super Bowl 55 and is bringing back the golden ticket giveaway with up to $55 million in prizes up for grabs. So go on over and download the DraftKings app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps to enter the free $55 million Super Bowl prediction challenge. Everyone gets an instant prize up to $25,000 just for playing. That's code FANRUN in all caps, only at DraftKings, the official daily partner of Super Bowl 55. Terms, conditions, and eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Hour number two of the Blitz is live right here on Fan Run Radio, Fox Sports Knoxville, broadcasting live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer studios of Fan Run Radio, as always. And, of course, we're broadcasting live on the radio, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM, as always. The podcast will be uploaded just moments after the show goes off the air. You can check in with the Periscope live video feed. That's right there, available to view on the Facebook and Twitter accounts. You can go to fanrunradio.com. That's a great place to check in with all the latest information surrounding the Tennessee coaching search, as well as the Tennessee basketball team. What's been going on the last two games? Hey, you can go and find a little bit of writing about it over on fanrunradio.com. And then finally, last but not least, go ahead and check out the Fan Run Radio app, which is free to download right there on your app store. Hey, take the show, take the station, wherever you are headed throughout the day. All right, gentlemen, hour number one is in the books, and hour number two is on deck. My name is Rick Butler. Joined to my left, that is Brandon Ork. Joined to my right, that is Charlie Collier. And, of course, Chance Collins back behind the booth. Gentlemen, let's not waste any more time. We have a great guest right here on the phone lines, on the G3 Help Me Hotlines, as we start out hour number two. You guys ready?
Ready.
Stay ready. Ain't got to get ready.
All right, let's do it. Gentlemen, coming up next on the show, we are pleased to be joined by Chris Vanini of The Athletic, talking about this Tennessee coaching search. Good morning, Chris. Welcome on to the show today. We're pleased to have you on for the first time ever.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Chris, we got to talk about, it's just been a wild week here for everything Tennessee football related, and kind of just starting back to last week, I've seen you have a lot of great articles kind of about Tennessee's new athletic director, kind of where they might be heading in here in the coaching search. But let's jump back to last week. At the beginning of the week, or excuse me, in the middle of the week, Tennessee announces Danny White as its new athletic director. Did Tennessee get this athletic director hire correct, in your opinion, just in the college football world?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Danny White is a home run hire. He's, I think, given where he was already, one of the top athletic directors in the country. Not only, you know, he has succeeded at the two most important things an athletic director has to do. Number one is hire coaches. He has hired several very good coaches at Buffalo and UCF, from Lance Leipold, Nate Oates, Scott Frost, and some others. And the other is fundraising. You know, UCF set a bunch of fundraising records while he was there, even during the pandemic, they were still raising money at a pretty good pace. So I think this was an absolutely, again, home run hire for Tennessee.
So with the acquisition of Danny White, you know, Tennessee fans, or really even, we've been on a little bit of a roller coaster ride, knowing that he does things a little bit differently in this coaching search. You know, us as the fans, we are certainly not unfamiliar with coaching searches here, and in a lot of ways, coaching searches kind of falling off the rails at some point. That has not happened yet. If anything, it's been the complete opposite, where Danny White and whoever, you know, he's using in this search, including the searching firm, it seems like they've been holding all the cards very close to their chest. Is that a normal thing that we can expect in the future with Danny White? You know, these very kind of close-knit searches in order to find different kind of head coaches for Tennessee athletics.
Yeah, he is very good at keeping things in a tight circle that don't get out. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I was down in Orlando when UCF won the conference championship and Scott Frost was there, and he had taken the Nebraska job after that game. And I stayed around in Orlando for a couple of the other days waiting for UCF to make a hire, and it was we knew that they had announced a press conference. I think it was a Monday. It was coming up, and we were trying to figure out who the hire was. It was this coach or that coach. Couldn't figure out who it was. Then they make the announcement, and it's Josh Heupel, which came out of nowhere. No one that was not a name that had really come out very much, was not talked about, was kind of a surprise hire. So, yeah, Danny White is good at keeping these things close to the vest and not getting a lot of leaks out.
Absolutely, and that is certainly something that we have been kind of experiencing over the last couple of days. Even the Tennessee Athletic Department has shut down the plane tracker. So us crazy fans can't even go out and try to track the plane, see where it's going. I even heard that they might have been throwing decoy planes out there to try to throw people off the trail. But, man, that's all kind of surrounded around this coaching hire. Are there any names that you have heard or maybe has stand out to you where Tennessee might be headed in this direction? We know that a lot of things, because they are being held close to the vest, a lot of things aren't being leaked out, which is really good for Tennessee. But are there any names that kind of stand out to you in a direction where you think that Tennessee might be able to succeed if this is the direction they end up going?
Well, the one name we've kind of consistently heard around out there is Tony Elliott, the offensive coordinator at Clemson, who coincidentally was actually in the mix for the UCF job last time it opened. I don't think Tony Elliott interviewed for that job, though. So there is some familiarity between Danny White and Tony Elliott as it relates to coaching searches, but Tony Elliott's obviously done a tremendous job at Clemson. He calls the plays there. He's been a great recruiter. He's been there for a long time. He spent all of his coaching career in South Carolina. Young guy, up and comer, who's making, I don't know if he's making $2 million yet, but almost $2 million. So he's one of the highest paid coordinators in the country. I think he'd be a very good hire if that's where they go, but there are certain to be a lot more other coaches in the mix. There have been rumors, whispers about other coaches in and out. But like I said, with Danny White, you never know which way he's going to go. I mean, he hired Lance Leipold at Buffalo out of the Division III ranks. And nobody was looking at Lance Leipold at the time at the FBS level. And now Leipold has Buffalo on one of their best runs that they've had ever. So he's, again, what Danny White's got a good track record of hiring coaches. He keeps it pretty secretive, but he also could surprise you.
Chris, when you talk about Danny White surprising folks, and I mean, that's what we're getting around here too. It seems like everything's close to the vest. I mean, Tennessee's even supposedly shut down tracking devices.
Wild.
You can't even do plane tracking now for fans.
It sent our people crazy.
What would you say from a – because we know, being on the pulse, living here in Knoxville, of what we think Tennessee, who they should go after – who would you say, as an outsider's perspective, that Tennessee has to go after to get this ship back on, you know, back on course? Like, is it the offensive-minded coach? Is it the proven Power Five guy? What kind of move would you say Tennessee needs to make when they do go after this coach and get it right this time and kind of get rid of this decade of dysfunction?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say there's any one characteristic you're going to need, but it's going to need to be, I think, somebody that has thick skin. I think that's what was appealing about Greg Schiano to John Curry last time, was that it was a coach who had been through the NFL and taken a lot of heat, so he was used to it, as opposed to hiring somebody who had never really gone through that, which is, you know, obviously what Jeremy Pruitt had to deal with. So, you know, does that mean it's an SEC coach? Does that mean it's somebody else? I'm not sure. I think there's a handful of Group of Five coaches who would be really good fits there. I think Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina would be great. He's an East Tennessee guy, named his kid after Heath Shuler, and he's got a really fun and different offense out there that other people in the SEC aren't running. The problem is he's never coached at the Power Five level. So can he handle a lot more on his plate with that? Billy Napier, the head coach at Louisiana, he's been an assistant at Clemson. He's been an assistant at Alabama. So he's been in the big programs, and he's done a really, really good job down there. And then I don't know if he's in the mix or not, but Lance Leipold, again, at Buffalo, he interviewed for the Vanderbilt job and was pretty impressive, but Clark Lee was always going to be the guy there. And again, Danny White hired Lance Leipold at Buffalo. He doesn't have ties to the area, but again, he's a guy who wins. He's won everywhere he's been. He won 6 Division III national championships. So if I look at guys with head coaching experience, those are the three I think about right off the bat. And I guess Hugh Freeze is out there. I mean, I think Hugh Freeze would win. I don't know if Hugh Freeze is going to get the job, because I don't know how you fire a guy for NCAA violations and then hire a guy who lost his last job in large part because of NCAA violations. So there's a lot of different ways they could go here. But at the same time, I think there's a really good pool of candidates.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, you've been looking at Tennessee fans and trying to kind of gauge the interest of, I don't know, some of the things that they look for, and not that the fans' opinion is factored into anything Danny White or anything that the search firm is doing, but you kind of see some of the directions that, you know, maybe the fans want to go. I think personally, though, something that isn't talked about maybe nearly enough with this coaching hire is this investigation that just went down before this coaching search really started, that people have really latched onto and had some fun with. How important, or maybe important is not the best word, but how impactful do you think those implications from the investigation are going to be heading forward? And how big of a hesitation do you think that is for some of the coaches that are looking at this job? Do you think that kind of maybe takes away some of the younger coaches who are saying, I don't want my first Power 5 Division 1 head coaching job to be surrounded by some of the outside investigation consequences that Tennessee might be dealing with over the next couple of years?
It's absolutely huge. I mean, when the job opened, I wrote, every time a job opens, I write a job profile, kind of the biggest factors that are going to impact a search. Number one for Tennessee was who's going to make the hire. Obviously, we didn't know. That's been answered.
Right.
Anyway, number two is, what does this investigation do? You know, if you're Tony Elliott and you've turned down all sorts of interest for all kinds of jobs and will be at a comfortable place like Clemson, do you risk it to go to a place like Tennessee? I think it's different. I think if you're a Group of Five head coach, you're more willing to take that risk, because if it doesn't work out, you can go back to getting a Group of Five head coaching job. But yeah, if you're Tony Elliott, you got to figure out what exactly is going on here. What are the possible penalties that are going to come? How long is my contract going to be? You know, when Matt Rhule got the Baylor job after the Art Briles scandal, he had a 6 or 7 year contract or something like that, something a lot longer than you typically see. And that was the reason, because they had that investigation hanging over it. So the coaches who are interested in this job, especially if you're an assistant, are going to have some leverage here, because Tennessee is in a spot where they don't know the answers here. And part of the reason they don't know is because they launched this investigation themselves. So it's certainly a unique way this has come about. And yeah, I think everybody's trying to get a handle on what could these possible penalties be. Is it going to be scholarships? Is it going to be multiple years of a postseason ban? You kind of got to need to get a gauge of what you think it could be before you take this job, no matter who you are.
Krista, what do you think the timeline is now for this coaching hire, and how important do you think it is to get a coach quickly, based on, you know, some of these players in the transfer portal, as well as the status of the ongoing investigation?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I wasn't sure how long the AD search would take. Usually those things take a couple of weeks, but they got that one done pretty quickly. So now things really ramp up. I imagine it'll go pretty quickly, because we have the next signing period, I think, is next week. You know, so you got to figure out roster situations. You got to get guys back in. Try to get guys back who have gone into the portal. So, you know, if this went past this week, I guess I would be a little surprised. Again, it's really hard to know, because of the timing, because of everything surrounding this job, when you're going to know certain answers and when you're not. But I imagine Tennessee's working as quickly as possible here, and it's possible something could happen by the end of the week.
If Tennessee were to make the best possible hire, I mean a home run hire, with the roster attrition that they've dealt with and with the pending violations and the investigation, how long of a rebuild realistically do you think Tennessee is at right now?
Well, I think part of it kind of depends on what those transfer portal guys do. If
right.
you lose all those guys, then you're going to have to kind of tack on a couple more years. I mean, Florida and Georgia are operating close to peak capacity right now. Missouri had a surprisingly pretty good year under Eli Drinkwitz. Plus, you got to play Alabama every year. So I guess it, what is it rebuilding to? Is it rebuilding to winning 10 games in a season? You know, that hasn't happened since 2007, I think, the last time they won the East.
Yeah.
So it's going to take a bit. And more than anything, they got to figure out the quarterback situation. You're not going to win if you don't have a quarterback, no matter who the coach is. So, you know, we'll see if they're able to get some sort of transfer quarterback or a recruit in a future class. But until that happens, I think that's what you need before Tennessee kind of really gets back up into contending for the East.
Absolutely. You know, for Tennessee fans, there's a lot of just kind of wait and see right now, whether it's about the coaching search or whether it's about anything related towards next season or even some of these transfer players, Chris, that you're talking about. It is a lot of a wait and see, and we see where things go from here for Tennessee. Now, real quick before we let you go here today, I do want to ask you another question, but kind of switch gears a little bit. Now, when I follow you on Twitter, Chris, I love seeing some of your wrestling tweets. You're a big fan of the WWE from what I know. So I got to ask you one quick WWE question, if that's all right with you.
Yeah. Shoot.
Okay, so, you know, we're obviously here in Knoxville, and we've all been to the Raw that was in Knoxville a little while ago, but one of the best parts about that Raw was seeing our mayor, Glenn Jacobs, formerly known as Kane, come out there and have a segment with the Fiend Bray Wyatt. So we got to ask you real quick, is there any Kane memory that stands out to you among the rest, whether it was from a while ago, maybe around the debut, or something maybe a little bit newer? I don't know, like a Team Hell No. Is there any Kane memory that stands out to you in your wrestling history?
It's definitely his debut at might have been Bad Blood 1997.
Yes.
When he interrupted the Hell in a Cell match between Shawn Michaels and Undertaker, the first Hell in a Cell match. And that was right. That was when I first got into wrestling as a kid. That year, kind of the second half of '97, and so when Kane came out and did his debut and had the fire and everything, that was incredible. I'd never seen anything like it. I think that first iteration of Kane, when he could control the fire and he was fully masked, and we didn't know it was Glenn Jacobs under there. I think that was the most kind of intimidating, and that's my favorite version of Kane when I think about everything that he's gone through in that character.
Yeah, I'd very much agree with you. And obviously for me, being a little bit of a younger fan, a lot of those memories had to come through the form of YouTube clips and the WWE Network and stuff. But actually in his autobiography, he talks about kind of, you know, some of the things that have happened in his career in Knoxville and everything. But he talks about that story in particular a lot, and some of the nerves and some of the back behind the scenes things that went into that debut. But I think a lot of people would probably agree with you that if there's one Kane memory that sticks out the most, it's that debut involving The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, I mean, everything from ripping the door off to Vince McMahon yelling on the commentary. And it was a great story because they had, like, hinted that The Undertaker's dead brother was still alive and he was going to come back. And so then he finally did. And it was such a campy and funny story. I mean, the idea that The Undertaker burned down his family's funeral home when he was a kid, and it killed his brother, and his brother was alive. It was so, like, weird. It wasn't like an athletic competition. It was such a spooky, kind of haunted type of story, and it's something they don't do very often in pro wrestling, and they're actually doing it now with The Fiend, but it was really fun, and I was all in on it.
It is. It's storytelling, and it's theatrics, and because of that one night, we got the infamous quote, That's got to be Kane. But, Chris, man, thank you so much for joining us here on The Blitz today. Thank you for giving us a little bit of your time here today to talk about this Tennessee coaching search and to talk a little bit about some WWE and our own hometown guy, Kane, as well. Chris, we really appreciate you jumping on the show today. Thank you so much.
Yep, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. You can find him at Chris Vanini on Twitter. That is V-A-N-N-I-N-I. He's a national college football reporter for The Athletic. You can go and find a lot of great college football stories on his Twitter there. And as we were just talking about, he also is a big professional wrestling fanatic. And you can find him on the Getting Over podcast done by himself, talking a little WWE each week as well. So there you go. Great interview. And thank you to Chris very much for jumping on with us. We'll have to get him back on soon. Otherwise, let's take a quick break. Then we can talk about that right there on the other side.
CC on a beat. Yeah, yeah. I mean, where the f- should I really even start? I got
that I'm keeping in the dark. I got my across the street living.
You know, that's actually not a bad line there. I don't really even know where to start with this Tennessee basketball team. Things a little bit of a slide. So my question to you is, are you hitting the panic button yet? Or at least where is the panic meter at after Tennessee loses two straight games to Florida and Missouri? Lost the first game by a score of 75-49. Lost against Missouri on Saturday by a score of 73-64. So offense certainly showed up a little bit more, gaining 15 more points. But, man, what are your thoughts right now on where this basketball team is?
Soft.
Whoa.
Easy.
Soft.
Explain.
We're soft. Physically, mentally, we're soft. Every time we shoot the ball, one and done. Do we even try to get an offensive rebound? What is John Fulkerson doing? What is Eve Pons doing? We have no physicality. It's like it happened in the Florida game. It happened in the Missouri game. They come out. They start hot. They punch us in the mouth. And we have no answer. We have no answer the rest of the game. Now, I do think we are dealing with some injuries. Barnes even said it himself, and it's more than just Springer being out. And I do think that we're a different team with Springer on the court. But Vescovi's hurt. I don't know what Victor Bailey's doing. Where's he been? I just think we're soft.
Brandy, you
we need a gut check.
Need to do some jumping jacks before each game. But, Brandy, you mentioned to me when we were watching the Missouri game, you said, have you really looked at our offense? And I said, yeah, like, of course, I've watched every game. And he said, no. Actually look at it for a second and watch what we do, not just on one possession, but watch multiple possessions in a row. Watch the guys who don't have the ball. Watch the route that the ball moves. And so that's what I did. I sat there and I watched a couple possessions in a row. And, man, Tennessee's offense doesn't seem like they do really anything that complicated. You don't see them making a lot of off-ball picks. It's a lot of moving the ball around the horn. The one specific play I'm thinking of was you took it all the way around the horn twice, including one jump pass where you're jumping out of bounds just to throw it across the baseline, which looked terribly risky to me. And then it ended up with a jab step, step back three-pointer. That was our whole offensive possession. There's got to be a little bit more something. We know that we don't have any true, like, conference-changing athletic playmakers on the team per se. And especially, we believe that maybe our best offensive playmaker is out right now with an injury. So you have to do something a little bit more creative. You cannot sit here on this, let's just keep throwing around the perimeter, and then maybe Eve Pons is going to hit a mid-range, even though he did have an amazing game on Saturday. He was the only Tennessee player that really came to play offensively. But it doesn't look like we're doing a lot of complicated scheming. It doesn't look like there's really a set offensive tone or identity. So I challenge you to go do that. Watch the next Tennessee basketball game. Watch what the offense does. You'll be surprised, well, I think, at times.
To me, in the game on Saturday in particular, when we set our screens, we didn't set our screens with any kind of conviction. We'd set a screen, and the Missouri player would go right through it. It's like, set the screen and set it. Don't let the guy just go right through it. We did that so many times on set. And it's like, why are you even setting a screen if you're not going to get your guy? And they would just go right over the screen every single time, and we would just pass it around. I don't know. I think we have identity issues, and maybe it resolves itself a little bit when Springer gets back. I don't know. I thought he might have played on Saturday. They said he was close to playing on Tuesday. Wanted to wait till Saturday. Still doesn't play. I don't know.
I wouldn't push it either, though. We need him for the postseason healthy. But I agree with you, Brandon. I think we're very soft. I think we do things passively. And we don't do things with enough intent away from the ball offensively. But I would also say that we are a statistical anomaly. You get a team that's last in three-point shooting in the SEC, and they come in and knock down 42% of their threes. We, again, I've talked about shot quality on here before.
Oh, yeah.
The margin keeps growing. Our shot quality keeps getting better, and our defensive shot quality forced also continues to get better. And somehow we keep playing bad basketball. And if you looked at it in just like one game and take it away from, you know, this stretch of games, you say, oh, you know, that happens. You know, we just had a bad night. Oh, we were cold. Oh, they got hot. But the fact that that's consistently happened for weeks means that there's something else that plagues this team.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ken Pomeroy does say in his analytics and everything else that outside of free throws, there is nothing in the box score that is least affected by the defense than the three-point shot. I mean, that's just the offense either makes them or misses them unless the defense isn't going to impact that too much. And yeah, we've had a lot of threes made against us, but there's just something deeper at the root of this. And I think, you know, some of the things you touched on, the identity issues of this team, the general softness, the general lack of leadership, especially from the upperclassmen, all of that
it's just like
is contributing to it. But
it's just like we have no sense of urgency. There's no we lack tenacity.
You know what?
It's just, we're just out there. It's just like we're just out there.
You know what? There was a play, and I'll give credit to Russell for this thought, because I was watching his halftime periscope in the middle of the Tennessee game on Saturday night, and he talked about a play that had just happened a couple seconds before where Pons gets shoved to the ground, and Barnes is livid. Barnes is yelling. He is on the court, which, by the way, can we get Konzo was standing in the three-point corner the whole game. What was up with that? He was on the court. It was so frustrating. But either way, Rick Barnes was so livid about when they just shoved Eve Pons to the ground. And Russ was saying on his Periscope, man, I love that Barnes is fighting for that. But if you're Pons, like, get up and push back a little bit. Show some fire. Show some fight. I know that ultimately, like, the smartest thing to do is to not respond in that situation. Maybe responding would have got worse. But, Brandon, to your point, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of fire that this team is playing with right now. A sense of urgency, a sense of fight, a sense of, hey, we gotta knock down, drag them out fight against a rival on the road in Florida who has not forgot what you did there at on the road against them last time, and then B, against a top 25 Missouri team that you kicked the crap out of at the beginning of the season. Of course it's going to be two knockdown games. You have got to show up with a little bit of fight. And they didn't. And they got housed in both games.
Another thing, missed free throws continues to be something that we... Why? Why can we not hit free throws? We missed 7 on Saturday. Santiago Vescovi missed 4 in a row.
You have two guys who are shooting above 80%. Or excuse me, one guy who is shooting above 80% from free throw percentage, and that is Triple J at 81.5. Victor Bailey Jr. is at 80, and everybody else is less than 80. And I think that's unacceptable for a number 6 ranked team. Other teams are going to hit their free throws. Are you really going to let a worse team beat you and compete with you till the end of the game because of that? Because of the charity stripe? And I know that's not the sole reason. There's more to it. But come on. Again, I think maybe there's a little bit of a slide right now. And look, I don't really believe that there's any reason to hit the full-on slam the panic button. But there is a little bit of a slide that Tennessee is going through right now. A little bit of an identity crisis. Need to get this resolved quickly. Look, you got a number 9 ranked Kansas team who, by the way, is also on their own hell of a slide. They are playing horrible lately, but we are too. We need to be better than Kansas at least when they come up in 2 games next Saturday afternoon.
Don't sleep on Mississippi State on Tuesday night either. Yeah.
The good news, though.
The unranked teams.
If there is some good news.
Okay.
Is that we played well enough throughout the season where we can deal with a couple losses and deal with this mid-season slump and be able to try to work through it without those losses being detrimental to your team.
Sure. Absolutely. The back-to-back losses, I just think it is concerning, you know, and obviously for any team. Tennessee's defense hasn't been playing as well lately. Again, I think that's because there's been offensive frustrations. I think it's going to be a lot harder to play defense when you got nothing working for you on offense. You're going to get a little bit frustrated.
You're just missing shots that you should make night in and night out.
By the rim,
and they're making shots they probably shouldn't make night in and night out. And you got to figure out why that's happening and how you fix it. Yeah. But I think this team's talented and it's well coached, so they will figure something out, surely.
Well, also, we turned the ball over 16 times on Saturday, which is a little uncharacteristic of this team. But I think Missouri's defense was, they put the clamps down. But you got to find some kind of answer.
Tennessee started out the season 7-0, and they have been 3-3 in their last six games. It's important. It's important to get this to get the ship fixed. You are 3-4 in SEC play.
Yeah.
Excuse me, 4-3 in SEC play. That's not great.
No, it's tough. I'm not ready to just ring the alarm, but I do think there are some. I don't know if this team is as good as we thought they were. And that's because same things you've struggled with over the years. You struggle with in football, somewhat not a proven leader, nobody taking the reins. I've talked about, they need Springer back. But, yes, it's true. Like, you shouldn't just have to defend on one person, especially when we talk about the depth they had. But Viscovi's not a point guard, man. He has too many turnovers. He's a turnover machine, and he just doesn't handle – the ball, I think, when Springer's out there. Heck, even when Josiah Jordan James is running the point, I think he runs the point better than Viscovi. You talk about Fulke, he's been a little soft. I've been saying about Pons. Yes, he has the NBA body and the potential, but what can he get you outside of, some little turnaround jumper that he doesn't even hit? He's not a great shooter. Like, it's
on Saturday, he did.
Hit a three.
He did on Saturday. He kept us in that game on Saturday. Yeah. But before I agree. Yeah. Generally, yes.
Yeah, he hasn't given you much.
Look, to that point exactly, he had 20 against Missouri. His last four before that, 5, 5, 9, 8, 6. Yeah. Horrible. Eve Pons should not be scoring single digits.
Well, when you think about that, he's an NBA talent.
And not 10 in two straight games.
You would like more out of him when you think, this is a guy that's probably going to be able to play at the next level because of his body. I mean, just he has all the potential if they can get it all into one and he can prove that potential. But, yeah, I'm not ready to ring the alarm or press the panic button, but I do think that we're back to, or at least I'm back to, tempering my expectations for this team moving forward. I mean, I'd say at least Sweet 16. I mean, I hope they make it to the Sweet 16. We talked about it before. They're definitely a team that could be bounced out in the first round, opening weekend. They could. So I hope that they get it fixed. Hope Barnes can ignite a fire in them. I guess as we push through the rest of the conference games and get up to the conference tournament, because things are not well for them. They don't look as dominant as we thought they were going to be, and as they looked in the first half of the season, they don't look that great. They look fourth, fifth best team in the SEC right now.
I wouldn't disagree.
But on a good day, they can be the best team in the SEC. They can be a top five team in the country when everybody's buying in and they're rolling on all cylinders.
Man,
but
you gotta figure out
there right now
offense to beat Alabama as well. That's going to be a big key to it too. Look, we're trying to figure out how to get to the championship because that is obviously the goal for two teams. Though in the football world, that is exactly what they have done. Gentlemen, we are officially on the horizon of Super Bowl 55. We have our two teams. Let's talk about it coming up next, right here on the Blitz.
Apex Pest Control is your complete pest management company.
All right, here we go, back here on the Blitz. 11:40 a.m. checking in with the fellas here. We have been, we've been rolling through this show today. It's been a great show. Here on a Monday, talking a lot about a lot of the things that have happened over the weekend in sports, as well as just trying to continue to break down everything that's going on with the Tennessee sports world right now, whether that is in football or basketball. But guys, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's check in with the NFL. Man, yesterday was a huge day, and Super Bowl 55 is officially set. Kansas City, Tampa Bay. The two teams will match up. You have Patrick Mahomes. You have Tom Brady. Brandon, is this the best possible matchup that a non-biased football fan could have asked for in the Super Bowl this year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Mahomes, Rodgers would have been pretty good, but Mahomes, Brady is I mean, that's the one, right? I mean, that's
it's baby goat and goat.
Yeah, I mean, it's old guard, new guard, however you want to put it. Seems to be, I don't know. Do you think if Brady wins 2 weeks from yesterday? Think if he wins, think he retires on the spot?
Ooh. No.
No. I don't know, man. I kind of feel like he thinks he can do it again.
I think he's super competitive. As we know that and we've seen, I think he comes back.
Have you all seen that picture that's going around? It's a side-by-side of Tom Brady at his first Super Bowl and then the picture of him now going into his 10th. Have you seen that going around
Has
Twitter?
Has not aged?
He looks younger.
No, I think so, too.
He looks younger.
I think he definitely looks younger over the years.
I think he's into something weird and illegal that's making him do this, but I don't want to figure it out.
Tom Brady, whenever he won his – I think we talked about this off the air. Whenever he won his first one, though, Mahomes, kindergarten. Think about that.
Wow.
Think about that. Mahomes was in kindergarten when he won his first Super Bowl. And Josh Allen was also in kindergarten.
I personally would have loved to have seen the Bills and the Buccaneers. I very much would have enjoyed the narrative of the Bills. Finally, Brady leaves. Finally, you win your division. You don't have to worry about Brady and those darn Patriots anymore. And then you get all the way to the Super Bowl, only to have to worry about Brady once more. I would have very much enjoyed that. But, I mean, you know, Chiefs, Bucks, you couldn't ask for much of a better game.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good one, too. I don't put it past Brady to win his – will this be number 7 or number 8? I think this would be 7. But, I mean
– 7, yeah.
I don't think it's debatable anymore. I think the guy's the GOAT. And but it's like the Chiefs. I was talking with somebody just days before the game yesterday, and they're like, you know, who you got, you know, Chiefs or Bills? I mean, the Bills are hot. And the Bills are hot. You got a lot of young talent. And I think they'll be – Josh Allen will have them back in the AFC Championship game, I believe. But what you saw, Bills got out to a slight lead, but the Chiefs can just turn it on at any time. Like, they can just flip the switch, and then they can bust 21 on you in you know, 5 minutes. Like, they really can score at will sometimes, it seems. So, I do think we got a good Super Bowl.
Yeah.
As a Packers fan, I'm disappointed. But I'm much more happier that it's Brady Mahomes than Breeze. I think this game will be pretty damn good. You look at the offensive talent on both sides of the ball. I think that Tampa Bay edges them slightly on the defensive side, but not much. But I think it's going to be whoever has the ball last.
I think Tampa Bay's defense is much better, but I think the Chiefs are obviously the better offense. You know, I do think that, Brandon, maybe we should talk about this, just all the other AFC teams should just get together and decide that they're going to just do a separate award for reaching the AFC Championship game, and they'll celebrate it. It'll be a big deal because unless Patrick Mahomes gets hurt or Andy Reid is not the head coach of the Chiefs, it's hard to imagine them not in the Super Bowl every year for the next decade.
Yep. I would agree.
One of the best memes I saw since Brady won, it's you know, the Bernie Sanders memes that have been going around.
Oh, yeah. The best memes ever,
too. It's Belichick on Bernie's body sitting with his hands crossed, and it says Bill Belichick watching everyone realize Tom Brady was the system.
Oh, we're stupid. I don't think Bill Belichick will be fine in the long run.
Like, I know you're – I know. You,
you don't even know what I was about to say.
You said you don't think that he can say that Brady was the system is what you're about to say.
I don't think you can say that Brady was a system or that Belichick was a system. I think they were just two really good people at what they do that worked together to make something even better.
No, but that's been the running.
It doesn't have to be one or the other.
That's been the running line for years. Brady can't do it without Belichick. He's a system quarterback. I'm just saying, like, that's been the talk.
Did you guys see that one interesting quote? I don't know which ESPN talking head it was, but somebody said, you know, hey, you really think about it. Nobody went to New England to go get coached by Bill Belichick. People went to New England to play
with Tom Brady.
With Tom Brady. Absolutely. And I do kind of think about that. That's interesting in the long run. But, man, I'm with you. The Chiefs will be there for a long time, a very long time. Around the table, who do you think is officially the Super Bowl favorite? Remember, you got Chiefs defending champions, but the Buccaneers are at home.
I think that the Bucs are going to be the favorite.
Okay. Brandon?
Probably about like 3.5, okay. Something like that.
No, I think Chiefs. Okay. I think Chiefs will be the favorite. One thing, Eric Fisher, is he going to play?
That's a big question.
Left tackle?
Yeah. He went out against the Bills with an Achilles injury.
He's got 2 weeks.
But it's an Achilles.
It is an Achilles.
I know, if it's any
type of tear, he's done.
Eric Fisher will miss the Super Bowl after tearing his Achilles in the championship.
Oh, yeah. That's a year
he's
injury.
He's done. So what do you think? Who do you think's the favorite?
I mean, I still think the Chiefs are the favorite.
Okay.
But, I mean, that Bucs D-line's got to be licking their chops.
Charlie?
Knowing that Fisher's
out. I just
think
the betting public's going to go full Bucs.
I think it'll probably open up with Chiefs at about 4.5, maybe 5.5, and then people will pour it in on Tom Brady and the whole narrative of that, and it'll drop down to about 2.5, 3.5, and jump get back to about 4.5 by game time.
So according to the FanDuel Sportsbook, which you can go check out right now, they are opening with the Kansas City Chiefs as a 3-point favorite in the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 55. So there you go.
Charlie, how do you feel about the Bucs not going 8-8 and Tom Brady proving you wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it happens, you know. They did a better job adapting the offense to Tom Brady.
Chris Godwin and Mike Evans did pair well with Brady, too, and Gronk was an added advantage.
Well, I mean, both of those guys, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, did a pretty good job.
Mike Evans had a hell of a year.
Yeah, okay. They did a pretty good job of being able to adjust their abilities and their style of play to Tom Brady's dwindling arm strength. You know, they struggled at the start of the year. There was a stretch for about 8 weeks that Tom Brady didn't complete a pass further than 20 yards, and they eventually just started getting it shorter to those guys. But
I did think
the Buccaneers' defense carried them too.
Remember that one Monday Night Football game where like Tom Brady just forgot it was fourth down and had the bad
against the Bears.
Had the bad error. Yeah, against the Bears, that was it. You know, there were plenty of moments this year where I think we might have said, hey, you know, doesn't look that great. Or, hey, maybe it does look a little bit old. But maybe also just needed a little bit of a change of scenery in order to get a little bit of life back. And it is true. It's like the Chiefs. Maybe there really are these special teams, these special players. Hey, it doesn't matter what happens in the regular season. They're going to be there for the playoffs. I think we got the best Super Bowl matchup possible. Hey, it's going to be fun. Final segment of the Blitz coming up next. Searching through my memory. I eat that lunch. She keep that booty booty. She keep that plump. All right, here we go, 11:53 a.m. Man, it's been a fun day here on the Blitz. In case you missed any of it, any minute of it, you can always go back and check it out in the podcast app, which will be on the Google Podcast or Apple Podcast or whatever you want. Just search Fox Sports Knoxville for those. At 11 o'clock, we talked to Chris Vanini of The Athletic, talked a little Tennessee football coaching search stuff with Danny White and who potentially he might be going after and all that kind of stuff. We talked a little bit about the Tennessee basketball team there in hour number two, as well as the NFL playoffs. And in case you missed anything from before that, well, of course, hour number one is in the podcast reel as well. All right, gentlemen, only got a couple more minutes left here on the show. What do you guys say we jump into a little if you haven't heard, and then we'll move into the day. Is anybody would like to start us off today?
If you haven't heard.
Yep.
For the first time in 37 years. Budweiser will not be running a commercial during the
what?
Super Bowl. They join Coke and Pepsi in sitting out of the Super Bowl.
Why?
Instead, the brand is using its marketing dollars to support COVID-19 vaccine awareness and access.
Wow. Wow.
Screw COVID vaccines.
Wow.
We need Budweiser advertisements.
Wow.
I need no.
Wow.
Sorry,
Charlie. What a terribly cold take. Just go YouTube it. You don't want to save lives? That's horrible.
No, sickening. I'd rather have Clydesdale's.
That's sickening.
I'd rather have Clydesdale's 10 days out of the week.
If you haven't heard, NBC Universal's Peacock streaming app has won the exclusive rights to the WWE Network. The WWE Network will now, in its entire 17,000-hour content library, including all pay-per-views and shows, will now be exclusively heading over to NBC Universe's Peacock streaming app. What a disaster. However, the deal is reportedly worth over $1 billion. That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's an extra billion on there.
Yeah, yeah, that's $3 billion. It's plenty of money.
Real quick, somehow our insane fans have found a way to track the untrackable plane.
That's what I was about to say.
You want to go ahead and I'll let you.
Yeah. Where's the plane at?
If you haven't heard, this morning it went from Knoxville to Charlotte and it is now leaving Charlotte. Knoxville to Charlotte, now Charlotte to Oxford, Mississippi. I think personally there's just nobody in the plane and they're just messing with people. That's what I would like to imagine.
They got off. They fly to Charlotte, get off the plane, and then they send it to Oxford as a decoy.
Let's go ahead and mess with them.
Hey, I don't put anything past them.
Let's mess with them a little bit. You guys want to have some fun today? Let's just send the plane all over the United States.
Let's just send it. Let's send it overseas.
Let's spend $10,000 on fuel costs.
Let's go to Mexico.
It's gonna fly from Oxford back to Lynchburg.
Yeah.
Let's see. In Oakland. In the day in Oakland, get the groomers back up again.
It's in Vegas.
Vegas. Oh no.
All right, national calendar days.
Let's do it.
Today, National Irish Coffee Day. You guys like Irish coffee?
Well, shout out to the Irishman for Connor Jameson, losing over the
coffee. It's also National Bubble Wrap Day. I love bubble wrap.
Two great things. What a day.
Also, I remember this as a kid. It's National Opposite Day. Who knew it was a real thing?
National Opposite Day.
And it's Monday, so it's a state.
National. Come on, New Mexico. Wyoming. Come on, New Mexico.
South Dakota.
Florida.
Oh.